This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Perry Corey with radio station KOYA, the community station in Rosebud, South Dakota, will be reporting on a situation with TransCanada and the KXL pipeline. Also, environmentalists from all over Missouri descended upon the state capitol in Jefferson City on Earth Day for a day of lobbying and rally, and I was on hand to record some of the activities thanks to Amrita Burdick. And we'll play some of the exciting parts from the rally on tonight's program. But first, I'm Natural Lee, and I have your news headlines. EcoWatch.com reports, a team from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Jane Irrigation Systems have come up with a method of turning brackish water into drinking water using renewable energy. This solar-powered machine is able to pull salt out of the water and further disinfect the water with ultraviolet rays, making it suitable for irrigation and drinking. Called a photovoltaic-powered electrodialysis reversal system, the technology recently won the top 140,000 decile prize from the United States Department of Interior that recognizes innovators who create cost-effective, energy-efficient, and environmentally sustainable desalination technologies that can provide potable water for humans and water for crops in developing countries. According to the MIT News Office, this electrodialysis system provides fresh water for about half the energy required by a reverse osmosis system, another water purification method that removes particles from drinking water via a semi-permeable membrane. Ultimately, the electrodialysis system could supply enough water for 2,000 to 5,000 people, the project's researchers found. The technology has already been tested in several villages in especially water-pinched India. Currently, there are 13 desalination projects under consideration along the California coast, including the Carlsbad Desalination Project, which will be the largest desalination plant in the Western Hemisphere once it's completed this fall. ScienceDaily.com reported, rainforests are often associated with pure, unpolluted air, but in Borneo, air quality is very much dependent on which way the wind blows. Researchers from the UK and Malaysia have detected a human fingerprint deep in the Borneo rainforest in Southeast Asia. Cold winds blowing from the north carry industrial pollutants from East Asia to the equator with implications for air quality in the region. Once there, the pollutants can travel higher into the atmosphere and impact the ozone layer. The research is published in Atmospheric Chemistry and Physics, an open access journal of the European Geosciences Union. In their study, the researchers show that once in the deep tropics, the polluted air is lifted towards the upper atmosphere. Quote, this can introduce a range of industrial chemicals that, with atmospheric lifetimes of just a few months to the stratosphere, which could have a potentially negative impact on the ozone layer, end quote. And finally, the BBC.com reports, populations of some of the world's largest wild animals are dwindling, raising the threat of an empty landscape, say scientists. About 60% of giant herbivores, plant eaters including rhinos, elephants, and gorillas, are at risk of extinction, according to research. Analysis of 74 herbivore species published in Science Advances blamed poaching and habitat loss. A previous study of large carnivores showed similar declines. According to the research, the decline is being driven by a number of factors, including habitat loss, hunting for meat or body parts, and competition for food and resources with livestock, with rhinoceros horn worth more than gold, diamonds, or cocaine on illegal markets. Rhinos could be extinct in the wild within 20 years in Africa, said the researchers. The biggest losses are in Southeast Asia, India, and Africa. Europe and North America have already lost most of their large herbivores in a previous wave of extinctions. Mike, I believe we have Perry Corey on the line.
I believe we do. Perry, are you there?
I am here, Mike.
Oh, great. Great to hear from you. So Perry is up in South Dakota, and we asked him to come on and share a little bit about action that took place on Friday. What can you tell us about what's going on up there?
Yeah, we took the 4.5-hour trip up there, and I came up to the protest. They were right there in the middle of probably the metropolitan area of Sioux Falls, where there was about 30-plus, I won't want to say protests, but the rally event that was there, they were all peaceful. And they were pretty much adamant about against the KXL, and then all of the traffic that was going by, it was pretty packed. It must have been midday traffic, but they received a good applause by the honking of the horns there. So they got the word out, and this was in anticipation to remind President Barack Obama that when he visits up there coming up this Friday, that it's a reminder that don't let it pass through.
So if I understand right, speaking of President Obama, when he makes this visit, it will be the 50th state he has visited. Is that correct? Like, he's visited every other state but South Dakota at this point. And
Yes.
So that's kind of the point of that day. And so I just saw this, Perry, published earlier today on Truth Out. It says, documents obtained by DSmog blog reveal an alarming rate of corrosion to parts of TransCanada's Keystone One pipeline. A mandatory inspection test reveals a section of the pipeline's wall had corroded 95%, leaving it paper thin in one area. That's after 2 years, not even 2 years old. And so we put that on Eco Radio's Facebook page. And so there originally, when you and I connected, Perry, there was talk there was going to be a hearing this week, but that got postponed till sometime later in the summer. Is that correct?
That is correct. They originally scheduled it for May 4th and was rescheduled for the weeks of July 27th through the 31st, and then again on August 3rd through the 4th. So we're hoping to get up there to cover that as well once it's set in stone, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah. We want to partner with you continuously on this story. And so something I saw posted earlier today said that the Native American organization that's involved, I think, is called the Indigenous Environment Network, I think that's what it's called. Indigenous Environmental Network. Sorry, and that they were. They're going to go back to a treaty that the U.S. government had with natives back then, and there's some clause in there about the bad man clause, where if there's a man acting bad, acting out in Indian territory, the U.S. government needs to remove them, and so they're trying to use that ploy, apparently.
Can I share a little bit further on that?
Please do.
It's the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty, and that was read aloud across of our airwaves up here at KOYA, and that was I think it was marking the 147th year that it came out. So, that's in there, the bad man clause, or, the if it was the white man committing a crime against the native people, there's some clauses in there, and also they had another one against us if we've committed crime against the white people. So there's language in that. It's pretty interesting. The 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. So that's what they're going to.
So interesting take on things, I'm glad we had the chance to connect with you. So this rally that you witnessed on Friday, was this in front of the law offices of TransCanada, or what was the rationale behind where it was?
Well, it was actually set on 11th in Minnesota, and they were actually probably on a corner of the YMCA. It's right there down there where local news, the TV stations are located. It's pretty much the most heavy congested traffic area.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was a pretty good strategic way. And I just want to share that, Dakota Rural Action was there, Indigenous Environmental Network, No KXL, Dakota Braveheart Society, and also the pipeline fighters. And I had the opportunity to talk to a guy, his name was Steven. He wouldn't give me his last name, but he was representing the Quaker community from the surrounding rural areas of Sioux Falls and pretty much in the northeastern part of South Dakota. So they were there to join the fight as well.
Okay, that's great. And anything else you want to share with us? We do want to connect again from time to time over the upcoming weeks. But anything else that you haven't yet shared with us?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to share something that was pretty much alarming to me. I found it on tarsandsblockade.org, and they were talking about the spills. It was built to spill, basically. They said they should be expecting a spill once every 7 years, and so far it spilled 12 times in the first year and 30 times spilled in its lifetime. So it was the oil firm Enbridge. They ignored the warning signs more than 5 years along the Kalamazoo River up there in Michigan. They said that's the most damaging onshore oil spill in U.S. history, and it threatens the Texas Carrizo, Wilcox, and Oglala Aquifer. Oglala Aquifer is pretty much the largest in the western North America region, and millions of people, agricultural businesses, they depend on it for drinking, irrigation, and livestock. So that's what's at stake if that's to be built, if they have any spills. And if that record is true, 12 times in the first year, can you imagine the type of damage that will be inflicted on everybody?
Right, correct. So so people have a sense of what's going on, what was originally, the hearing that was originally planned was for, because TransCanada's permit had run out, had expired after 5 years, so they were applying for renewal. And so now this has been delayed, and we'll hear more about this. And Perry, we really do appreciate you checking in with us. It's great community radio stations hooking up like this.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we'll keep in touch, okay, Perry?
Will do. I'll keep you guys updated, especially when it comes up in July 27th through 31st and August 3rd and 4th. We'll get there, and we will realign our communication so we can get you better reports.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. All right. Have a good evening.
Welcome.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Well, coming up next, Natural E is going to tell us how she spent her Earth Day, but first, these messages.
This week, we journey to Lebanon, where major religious groups have carved up political power and divided it among themselves. But does that ease sectarian tensions or inflame them?
The country can split apart at any moment along sectarian lines.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. The latest in our God and Government series. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
There's basically two trajectories. There's one trajectory, which one just been describing, which is a constructive, positive, offers hope. There's another trajectory, which is going in the opposite direction. And the question is, which one will prevail? But again, as I've said several times, and as you all know without my saying it, that's in your hands.
Noam Chomsky, Wednesday, 9 a.m.
And you are tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. We're back here in the studio, and Natural E is here. And so you went on a field trip on Earth Day, didn't you?
Yeah. I joined the Missouri Clean Energy Coalition, and we went down to Jefferson City. And I guess actually I joined John Fish Kerman, who's a part of the Kansas City portion of the 350 movement. And what the Missouri Clean Energy Coalition is a group of environmental groups within the state of Missouri. So we had a pretty large showing at our Capitol on Earth Day.
That's great. And so there was lobbying at first. And
mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Well, this is the first time I've ever lobbied. It was a really neat experience. And I guess some of the people that joined us on this trip had done it before. And so we were lobbying to let our senators know what bills we wanted them to support and environmental bills we wanted them to support for clean energy for the future and which bills we wanted them to not support. And I, just for anybody out there, you can go to Jeff City and you can walk into the Capitol building and you can go into your senator's office and you can ask to speak to him. It's really that simple. You don't have to be anybody special. And so, you know, it's important that we know that, especially when we're trying to take care of things that are really important, like these environmental bills.
And so You spent a good portion of the day. And so what happened? Did people break up into teams? Was it pretty organized? Mm-hmm.
Well, we broke up into teams because depending on where you are within the state, depends on which senator, you know, you talk to, who your senator is for your area. And so, yeah, we broke up into groups and tried to talk to everybody that we could and handed out information and stickers. And it led up to the big rally that we had at 2 p.m. that afternoon.
All right. And so speaking of that rally, we're gonna air that right now. But set the stage for us. So where was it?
Okay. Where it was right in the main, I can't even remember what they called it.
There's, rotunda?
Yes, thank you. Rotunda right there. And they had the stage for us, and we had all of our Earth Day, Lobby Day, Take Back Earth Day signs up everywhere. And people had signs, people had stickers. It was really exciting. And we had several speakers. So let's play the clip.
All right, let's hear this.
That's right. Make some happy noises for a happy Earth Day. My name is Kate Lovelady. I am the leader of the Ethical Society of St. Louis, which is a member of Missouri Interfaith Power and Light, which represents dozens of faith traditions across the state. So I'm just wondering, how many of you here today breathe the air? Some air breathers, nice. How many of you have loved ones who drink water? How many of you plan or hope to have great-grandchildren or future descendants who will eat food grown in the soil? You must be a special interest group then of air breathers and water drinkers and soil users. We are all here today to announce the creation of a new Missouri Clean Energy Coalition. Across the state, from all walks of life, we're becoming aware of the threats to our air, our water, and our earth from climate change and fossil fuel pollution. And we see that clean energy is the opportunity of the future. Already nearly 40,000 Missourians work in more than 4,000 clean energy businesses and efficiency, solar and wind, and we want more of that. We want and we know we can have both a strong economy and a clean environment. And a majority of Missourians across the state are with us. 77% want a plan for Missouri to reduce carbon pollution. 89% want more energy efficiency programs. 87% of Missourians want more wind and solar energy. People of all different backgrounds and beliefs have come together on these issues because climate change and pollution are not just practical problems. They are moral crises. If we do not act now, the youngest, the weakest, and the poorest of our communities will be hurt the most. We must act for them, and we must act for the future. Never before have humans made decisions that have such drastic impacts on the future. Our ethics must evolve to catch up to our technology. Future generations are completely at our mercy, and we have an ethical obligation to act in their interests. So the mission of the Missouri Clean Energy Coalition is to grow our clean and renewable energy economy to reduce fossil fuel pollution, address climate change, and create jobs now. We have four main principles in our coalition. They are transition from a reliance on fossil fuel energy to clean, safe, and renewable energy sources, specifically energy efficiency, wind and solar. Two, make energy conservation and efficiency a priority in meeting and reducing energy demand. Three, shift from jobs dependent on fossil fuels to jobs centered on efficiency and clean energy technologies. And four, secure a clean energy economy that is just and equitable and embraces all people regardless of race or creed or color or ethnic origin or income or any other distinction. Yes. Yes. The coalition supports a strong Missouri state energy plan by May 2015 and a strong state implementation plan of the Clean Power Plan by June 2016. We want to see a plan that transitions Missouri from fossil fuels and that prioritizes clean and renewable sources of energy. The coalition began recruiting membership just this winter. We are a new group, but in 3 short months, we have grown to include nearly 30 member organizations and supporters. I would like to acknowledge and thank our supporters in the Missouri Legislature. Hopefully, we've been able to thank them in person today. State Senator Jill Shoup, State Representative Stacey Newman, State Representative Margo McNeil, State Representative Jean Kirkton, State Representative Tracy McCreary, State Representative Deb Lavender, and State Representative Judy Morgan. So a big hand for our legislative supporters. And I would like to acknowledge and thank our member organizations. So please raise your hand or give a cheer or let us know that if you're here representing one of these groups. The Missouri Coalition for the Environment. Woo! Missouri Sierra Club. Woo! Renew Missouri. Woo! Jewish Environmental Initiative of JCRC St. Louis. Missouri Interfaith Power and Light. Woo! Ethical Society St. Louis. Woo! Mid-Missouri Peaceworks, Missourians for Safe Energy. Laverty Environmental Organization. Union of Concerned Scientists. Central Reform Congregation. Earth Dance Farms. Women's Voices Raised for Social Justice. Missouri Pro Vote. Populists in Action. Diesel Health Project. 350KC. League of Women Voters St. Louis, Progress Missouri, Franciscan Sisters of Mary, Climate Reality St. Louis, Missouri Sun Solar. Thank you all for being here. Today we will hear from 6 of the folks moving Missouri ahead in growing our clean energy economy and improving the quality of life for future generations of Missourians. We will begin with State Representative Clem Smith of St. Louis, a member of the National Caucus of Environmental Legislators and several labor and civic organizations. He serves on the executive committees of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. Please welcome Representative Smith.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Clem Smith of the 85th District in St. Louis County. Some of you all I've met before with the Sierra Club. Some of you came and saw me today, pulled me out of the chamber, and we got a chance to talk. Here we go, right there. One thing that is a myth is that environmental issues are monopolized by one group or one race or one part of society, one segment, and we all know that that's not true. I guess I could be called an environmentalist. Sometimes they try to use that as a bad word in this building, thinking that industry and the environment are mortal enemies and always have to fight against each other. And I'm not one that subscribes to that and believes that that's the case. As she mentioned before, I'm a member of the National Caucus of Environmental Legislators, and I also serve on the Natural Resource and Infrastructure Committee of the National Conference of State Legislators, where it's a coalition of legislators from all across the country coming together, passing different resolutions on things. And it's interesting being part of that group because you get to see the dynamic from all across the nation on what people are focusing on, from the East Coast, the West Coast, to the South, to Texas, and how the view of environmental issues varies from top to bottom. And I'm one who wants to fight to get it somewhere in the middle. You've got some states like Texas that are completely relying upon, you know, fracking, oil, and sometimes the environment is put to the side. Unfortunately, I kind of see that trend happening here in Missouri too, and that's something that we need to work against. one thing and one charge of being a legislator is to work and do things positive for your constituents. One thing that we all talked about when we ran for office was economic development. And far too often, being mindful of the environment and economic development does not come up in discussions here. And I think they go hand in hand. In years past, before I was born, before some of you all were born, there was a lot of energy and effort put into tearing this world up. We get one world. I think that same amount of energy should be put into repairing what we've done, and that can be the economic development. And we're seeing that now to put people back to work. There's a downside to tearing the world up. There's a downside to polluting in the air. And I've got an example in my district. I represent the Normandy School District. The Normandy School District, top reason for absenteeism in the school district is related to asthma. I couldn't believe it. I thought when one of the aides told me that they were making this up, trying to pander to me for some reason, then I went and I saw it. Every week, there is a bus that comes from Barnes Jewish Christian, Children's Hospital, that goes to different schools within the district to administer the medicine used for asthma. Some of these are environmental factors, through pollutants from big companies, highways, things of that sort. And some of those things happen in a household from parents that may not be educated on how what they're doing is killing their children. And it happens. So we have to be mindful of that. And I think that's all part of taking care of the earth and doing what's right. Like I said before, I believe that there can be a balance. It's hard sometimes being up here because we've got a lot of bills that come our way. I do my best to be on the right page with everything, but every now and then things happen. There was a list that I was given today, and I was sitting there and I was checking my record on these different bills, and my stance had been, and I was the only one on that list that I was on the other side of the coalition here, but we hopefully can work and get that better in the future. I'm happy to see you all here, you all coming together. I know you all have individual groups, but it always works better when you have a fist in this building. You have to be present, you have to apply this pressure, and you have to keep doing it. So congratulations to you all, and thank you for this opportunity to speak in front of you.
Thank you so much, Representative Smith. Next, I'd like to welcome State Representative Judy Morgan of Kansas City. She's a legislative chair of the Greater KC Women's Political Caucus. Please welcome Representative Morgan.
Hello, everyone. It's really great to be here today with you. I know I say this a lot, but I really mean it from the bottom of my heart. I am so happy when I see folks from around the state. Of course, I'm very happy when I see people from my area. I'm from Kansas City. A lot of Kansas City people here. I represent the 24th Legislative District. I think it's one of the best districts in the state. Some of my constituents are here today. And I can tell you, we have a very active and committed Sierra Club in my legislative district, and I'm very appreciative to them. I just met with them not too long ago for lunch, and they were able to really educate me and bring me up to date on all the different issues that are going on. So I really thank you. I thank you for your commitment. I thank you for your hard work, and I thank you for your dedication in making our earth a healthier and sustainable place to live. I am really proud to say that I was actually at an event of the first Earth Day on April 22nd, 1970, that 45 years ago. It was at my college campus. I was at UMKC, and we had a protest that day to protect the Earth, and we had teach-ins and classes, and it was a great experience. So I was there from the very beginning at that. One of the things that I always like to do is I was a history major, so I kind of like to look back at the history of things. So this morning I got on the internet and looked back at some of the history of Earth Day. And this is the 45th anniversary of Earth Day, and most consider it the birth of the modern environmental movement. Any of you who were alive during that period, like me, know it was kind of the days of hippies and protests, and a lot of people were protesting the Vietnam War. There was a peace movement going on, and most of the people were, at that point in time, at the beginning, they were protesting the war, and not necessarily the planet was at the center of what they cared about. But Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970, I think was the beginning of really making people care about what was going on to our Earth, and that, and from that, all of these things have come about. 20 million Americans took to the streets, parks, and auditoriums that day to demonstrate for cleaner air and water. Thousands of colleges and universities, just like where I went, organized protests against the deterioration of our environment. And like I said, I took part at UMKC. And over the last 45 years, we have had some improvements. We've cut down on air pollution. Many of us do things in our own personal lives, I think, that add to making the environment better. I know I was really so happy in Kansas City when we got curbside recycling. And so now every Monday at in my neighborhood, you see the blue bins sitting out in front of people's houses, and they're recycling things and not putting them into you know, big landfills. So that's a good thing. Also, I think many of us now, we know how bad plastic bags are, and we go to the grocery stores with our reusable bags, and that's really a good thing. So I think we've made personal changes in our lives, and I don't think that would have happened if we didn't have these Earth Days going on, and if we didn't have this education going on of the public. We know we've got a ways to go, but just like Representative Smith said, and I agree completely with him, we just have to keep persevering. We have to keep fighting for what we know is right. This is a good cause to save the Earth for the generations of people to come after us. And I want to let you know that our President, Barack Obama, in his weekly video address, he talked about this issue. He talked about our environment. He's visiting the Florida Everglades today on Earth Day to see how the environment is at risk from rising sea levels there. And one of the comments he made in his video address is, and we know this is a big issue, climate change can no longer be denied or ignored. So again, thank you. Really appreciate being here with you. And keep up the good work. Thank you so much, Representative Morgan. Now we will hear more about the personal impact of these issues from Carolyn Omperin of Columbia, a mother, grandmother, and tireless advocate for climate action, environmental protection, and public health. Please welcome Carolyn.
Hello, everyone. It's great to see so many organizations represented here today. As she said, I'm going to talk about a little bit about the public health aspect. And as we all know, summer is coming. For most of us, that means that we're going to be enjoying time at the lake or going hiking or enjoying all the great outdoor pastimes that Missouri has to offer. For some, though, summer is the time to begin to worry about air quality. Warm summer days combined with the pollutants from carbon-based plants result in the creation of more ground-level ozone. These orange and red alert high ozone days are a challenge for children and adults with asthma, the elderly, and people suffering from respiratory or cardiovascular diseases. I too have experienced some of these concerns. While I lived in University City, which is in St. Louis County, I was an avid jogger and I developed exercise-induced asthma. And these attacks only occurred when I jogged outside on warm summer days. So this was a symptom of being in the city. And ever since I moved away from the city, I don't have this problem anymore. My 10-year-old grandson still lives in St. Louis County. He has also developed asthma and now has to take an inhaler with him when he will be outside in the summertime. In the years from 2010 to 2012, St. Louis County had 41 orange alert high ozone days. This number scores an F for failing from the American Lung Association and their 2014 State of the Air report. 41 days is too many days that parents have to tell their children with asthma to stay indoors. Ground level ozone can be transported long distances by the wind. So this isn't just a problem for cities, it's a problem for rural areas as well. Other Missouri counties with F grades that's F for failing, included St. Louis City, St. Charles, Perry, Lincoln, Jefferson, Jasper, Clinton, Clay, Cedar, Cass, and Andrew. This is not a big city issue. Over 2.5 million people in Missouri live in places where the air can be unsafe to breathe. Implementing the Clean Power Plan, as proposed by the Environmental Protection Agency, will not only reduce greenhouse gas emissions and help reduce climate change, it will also reduce smog and soot that come from coal-fired power plants. Last year, a team of scientists from Harvard, Boston, and Syracuse universities published a study that looked at the health co-benefits of a carbon standard for existing power plants. So not just looking at the benefits for climate change, but looking at the co-benefits that would come along with it. Their research concluded that despite the significant improvements in U.S. air quality in recent decades, current emissions and air pollution levels still pose considerable health risks. They also found that the improvements in air quality that accompany a carbon standard can result in nearly immediate benefits to human health. Nearly immediate benefits to human health if we can get a carbon standard implemented. Their study found that the state of Missouri, with a plan like the Clean Power Plan, in a 10-year period in the state of Missouri, we could save 1,200 lives, prevent 310 hospitalizations, and prevent 70 heart attacks. If that's one of your friends or relatives, those numbers matter. Cleaner air will also avoid a significant number of missed school days. Cleaner air will avoid significant healthcare costs associated with treating these preventable illnesses. And cleaner air will avoid anyone having to tell my grandson he has to sit out the big ball game because he's having an asthma attack. We can accomplish all these benefits with simple proposals to replace dirty energy with clean energy and by implementing better energy efficiency measures in our homes and businesses. The majority of climate scientists are convinced we must take aggressive action this decade, not later, this decade, to prevent the worst impacts from climate change. And I'm convinced too. I'm doing what I can, along with my husband, to reduce our carbon footprint, but none of us can do this alone. As was mentioned earlier in a recent independent survey, 77% of Missouri voters support a plan like the Clean Power Plan that would close old polluting coal-fired power plants, that will increase the use of renewable energy like wind and solar, and expand programs to improve energy efficiency. We must have a state energy plan that swiftly transforms Missouri away from dirty energy. Missouri must do its part. And I wanted to conclude by referring to the words that are written up here above the columns. Where there is no vision, the people perish. I think nothing could be more true when you talk about the climate crisis. We must have a vision to deal with the climate crisis or the people will perish. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you again to our representatives. They gotta go represent. Our next speaker will be Dr. John Kissel of St. Louis, a graduate of Harvard Medical School who did his residency at WashU and is board certified in internal medicine as well as a fellow of the American College of Physicians. Please welcome Dr. Kissel.
Thank you, Kate. Well, Earth Day reminds me of a fellow named Richard Lew. Have any of you heard of Richard Lew? He's written a number of books. The most well-known, I think, is one called Last Child in the Woods. And in it, he draws evidence from a number of different disciplines to make the case that children, when they're exposed in an unstructured way to the natural environment, show a multitude of benefits in terms of emotional and psychological development and even intelligence. So he was here, he was in St. Louis about 3 years ago and spoke, and it was very interesting. He had an audience that includes some early education people and some urban planners and a lot of environmentalists. And in the discussion, someone asked him from the audience about a question about saving the planet. And he said, well, you know, I'm not really that concerned about saving the planet. The planet has been here for billions of years. It's seen a lot of changes. 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, it'll still be here. It'll be different, but it'll still be here chugging along without us. So with all due respect to the pallid sturgeon and the gray wolf and the baboon, I'm here today because I don't want my grandchildren to become part of an endangered species. The U.S. Surgeon General, as you've already heard, has recently stated that climate change is the number one health, public health risk for people in this country and around the world. Unfortunately, and you've heard about the poll of Missourians, who the vast majority of them believe that and want to see us address climate change. Unfortunately, however, we've encountered some legislators, who would rather secede from the Union than implement the Clean Power Plan. That's got to change, and we have to change it. As you've also heard, we're not simply talking about long-term threats. The Union of Concerned Scientists has said that pollution from burning coal represents one of the most immediate threats to public health in this country. When you burn coal, you generate 67 different known toxic substances that are harmful to human health and or the environment. So this leads to premature deaths, asthma attacks, asthma incidents in children, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, premature births, and on and on and on. But once again, we have a problem that there are legislators who don't get it. That's got to change too. A recent study you heard about indicates that we could save 1,200 lives a year, 1,200 lives in a decade here in Missouri alone by implementing the Clean Power Plan, not because we would impact climate change, but because we would reduce the pollution as a collateral benefit. So I urge all of you to push up on your agenda, your work with this Clean Energy Coalition. Get your organizations to join, work within your organizations that are members, because we've got a lot of work to do. We must convince our so-called leaders that the people of Missouri want rapid and major redirection in the area of greenhouse gas emissions, and that we want to breathe clean air. Thank you.
Before John reports on our lobby day, we have one more speaker, Caleb Arthur, founder and CEO of Missouri Sun Solar and vice president of the Missouri Solar Energy Industry Association and friend.
We do not inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. 3 years ago, when my brother Luke and myself started Missouri Sun Solar with 2 employees, we now have 30. We've also had the privilege of being ranked the number one residential solar installer in Missouri by Solar Power World, with over 500 homes now with solar in Missouri. Solar panels are going on Missouri's largest school district buildings right now as we speak in Springfield, Missouri. Currently today, the new Sherwood Elementary School, which is one of the first schools to be built in Missouri that's got net zero capability, which means it can produce all the energy it consumes, is being built in Springfield, Missouri right now. Every 3 minutes, a solar-powered system is going on a home or business in the United States. Clean Energy Jobs report for Missouri, as you heard earlier, 40,000 jobs in Missouri with the clean energy sector. 4,000 businesses in the clean energy sector of Missouri. That's astronomical from what it was just years ago. In my closing statement, I'd like everybody to let this sink in. This was over 100 years ago. A great man said, I would put my money on the sun and solar energy. What a source of power. I hope we don't have to wait until oil and coal run out before we tackle that. I wish I had more years left. Thomas Edison. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you both. Last but not least, John Hickey, Chapter Director of Missouri Sierra Club, will report on our successful lobby day today. I have heard personally of four more senators and representatives that have agreed to join our coalition. You guys did this. Senator Joe Keveney, Representative Joshua Peters, Representative Gina Mitten, and Representative Michael Butler all agreed to join with us. And John will give us some more good news about our day.
Thank you, Kate. And I've just been going through the lobby day report, and we've actually got a fifth legislator, Representative Kratke, who represents Dogtown in St. Louis, wants to be part of the MCEC, too. So that's great. And by my quick count, we've got eight legislators we took pictures with. So hopefully that means the Twitter sphere is jumping with these pictures. And I want to also recognize one of our teams actually got a picture with a Republican legislator, which is really important in this chamber. And it was the mighty Team 16, Brittany Cunningham and the rest of Team 16. Great job. And we've got, if anybody has not turned in their form, please do. I think I've got just about all of them, but if you haven't turned it in, please do. There's lots of good information that we will use to follow up with legislators based on what all the teams found out today. So, and if you took a picture and you have it on your smartphone, but you haven't put it on Facebook or Twitter yet, please do today before you go to sleep. Otherwise, you're gonna forget and it's never gonna happen. So if you've got the picture on your phone, be sure to put it out there. If you don't know what to do with it, just email it to one of Sarah or me or somebody, and we'll put it up on the Sierra Club Facebook page. So thanks, everyone, again for coming. And I think we got a lot done. I'm going to let Kate send us away.
Great job, everyone. Be proud of yourselves. So just to conclude, I'll say that human beings have been on the earth in one form or another for hundreds of thousands of years. Yet never before have we had the awesome ability to so completely mess things up for ourselves, the rest of nature, and even the future. But also, never before have we had the know-how, the imagination, and the ability to work together to create a world of beauty, health, good jobs, and happiness for everyone. Amen. Our descendants will look back to this critical time and they will either curse us or thank us. I believe that they will look back and say, thank goodness. Thank goodness for those people who saw and who cared and who worked to ensure a better future. So thank you to everyone who came out today. Thank you for seeing clearly and caring deeply and working tirelessly. And to end our day, we are going to follow the man with the guitar, Winston Apple, Kansas Music Hall of Fame inductee. And he's going to lead us out onto the steps for a song or two and a group picture so that we can document all of us together. Thank you for being here.
The American Friends Service Committee's Move the Money Listening Project heard from 46 different community leaders discussing community needs, budgeting and tax cutting, military spending, and better priorities for our community. Ira Herrett will highlight that project's findings and discuss ways we can shift the debate from austerity to investing in our future on this Wednesday's All Souls Forum at 6 p.m. right here on KKFI.
Hi, this is Randy Raley, and I host a Thursday morning time machine from 6 to 8 a.m., and it's a time and space long ago and far away as I play songs that were popular on this day in a certain year. It could be 1972, could be 1987, could be 1965, but it's a magical mystery tour as I play with your head by bringing back memories of what you were doing then. Thursday morning, 6 to 8, we'll explore a parallel universe with the Thursday morning time machine.
And I'm Naturally, and I'm back with your events for this week. On June 6th at 12 p.m., those who will together resist the tar sands pipeline will meet at Lambert's Landing in St. Paul and march together to the state capital of Minnesota for a rally to hear from movement leaders and come together to continue this fight. This march will show the strength of our movement and represent the many different groups that are fighting dirty energy and supporting clean energy solutions across the region. Although this is taking place in Minnesota, there is a group from the Kansas City area that will be going up there together, and you can find out how to join this caravan up to Minnesota on our Eco Radio Kansas City Facebook page. And there's a link there to RSVP, and it's not a commitment. You will just receive information on the event. On Saturday, May 9th at 7:30 a.m., the Kansas City Area Sierra Club will be hosting an outing. Join them for their Elk River Wind Farm hike in Latham, Kansas. The carpool will meet at 7:30 a.m. at the I-70 Business Center parking lot off 3rd Street and I-70 in Lawrence. Or you can meet them there between 10 and 10:30 a.m. Find more information at the link posted on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page. And on May 12th, at 6:45 p.m., the Kansas Sierra Club presents a panel discussion on innovations in local sustainable agriculture in the Kansas City metro area. Who is growing local food and how do you find it? What are the water resource issues in growing locally and in urban environments? What can you do to eat local and support sustainable food systems? Exciting things are happening with growers, markets, and eaters. Again, this event will be held May 12th, 6:45 p.m. at Overland Park Lutheran Church at 7810 West 79th Street in Overland Park, Kansas. For more information about this event, visit the Sierra Club online at kansas.sierraclub.org.
On the next Art Speak Radio, Phil Bauer's nephew Patrick Dobson is her guest.
If you'd read my new book, you know what I'm talking about.
Wednesday at noon.
This week on American Roots, Bio on the Bio, live in a reunion of New Orleans funk jam band The Meters. Then Southern Rock from Drive-By Truckers at the historic Civic Theater. And we roll up river to the Baton Rouge Blues Festival. Turn on, tune in, and chill out. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Wednesday evening from 7 to 9.
Secret trade deal threatens water? That and other stories for the week ending May 3rd, 2015.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
In 2011, the government of Quebec, Canada, placed a moratorium on fracking because they concluded the process can contaminate drinking water, pollute the air, and cause earthquakes.
About a year after Quebec's moratorium, a U.S. firm, Lone Pine Resources, sued Canada for $250 million under the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. The suit claims that the Canadian government is responsible for taking away Lone Pine's right to drill for oil and gas under the St. Lawrence Seaway.
This lawsuit is important because it shows how under trade agreements, corporations can recover money from governments when they pass regulations to protect human health and the environment, as Quebec had done.
While the lawsuit was brought against Canada under NAFTA, the same type of provision is being proposed in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that is currently being pushed through the U.S. Congress.
About 10 days ago, a committee of the U.S. Senate approved a fast-track process for TPP. Fast-track approval means that there will be very little debate over the details of the agreement by elected officials.
The trade agreement has been negotiated in secret for years, mainly by representatives of business and government officials. It will cover most countries in the Pacific Rim, except China. TPP's provisions have been hidden from the American people, except for some leaked portions.
The possible effects of TPP on efforts to protect waterways have raised the concern of many environmentalists, and among the most troubling aspects of the agreement are that it gives corporations the ability to sue governments, just like NAFTA did.
The people of Nepal are facing a major water crisis after last week's devastating earthquake. Water taps aren't working, and in many places, water's not draining due to the buildup of debris.
It is feared that the people in Nepal will resort to drinking unclean water, leading to the spread of disease. Many are living outside due to fears of more quakes, but their waste has to go somewhere and can get into other people's drinking water.
Many Nepalese are relying on getting their water from tankers, but trucks are having difficulty getting to people because roads are blocked.
The seriousness of this situation will likely worsen in the upcoming monsoon season, as diseases such as diarrhea, measles, and cholera spread rapidly when people are living outdoors in heavy rains.
The fight over water in California is tilting toward favoring industrial agriculture in the South at the expense of endangering wildlife in the North. The plan to conserve the Delta, where the San Joaquin and Sacramento rivers meet, is being gutted.
Last week, Governor Jerry Brown announced that the state is moving forward with building two proposed 30-mile tunnels that will carry water flowing south to farmlands of the Central Valley and to millions of homes in Southern California.
Brown said the state will heavily cut the Bay Delta Restoration Project that would have protected 100,000 acres of fish and wildlife habitat. Instead of spending $8 billion it had once committed to restoring the Delta, the state will spend less than 4% of that figure.
A spokesperson for the group Restore the Delta told the LA Times that this plan has now shifted from a proposal to protect 56 species and large habitats to a straight water grab. Every year, millions of people flock to the Grand Canyon in Arizona to see its sweeping views, hike its trails, or raft down the Colorado River.
But if they're thirsty, they can't take a sip from the Colorado. The park lacks any water rights to the mighty river that runs right through it.
To get water to growing numbers of visitors, the National Park Service back in 1965 constructed a pipeline from the north side of the canyon to the south.
The 16-mile pipeline starts in Roaring Springs, just below the north rim, goes down the canyon, bypasses the river, and heads back up the south rim where most of the park's hotels and restaurants sit.
But the pipeline is now over 50 years old, and it breaks between 5 and 30 times each year. The cost to replace it will be at least $150 million, making it the most expensive project in the entire national park system.
So if the Grand Canyon is in your summer vacation plans, fair warning, the drinking system may be shut down along corridor trails.
Looking further downriver, if your summer travels include a stop to houseboat, fish, or water ski on Lake Mead, things may look a little different.
This week, the water level in Lake Mead dropped to an all-time low, falling down to 140 feet below capacity as the prolonged drought continues to plague the Colorado River system.
Lake Mead is drawing closer to the 1,075-foot level, below which officials would declare a water emergency and begin rationing allotments to Nevada and Arizona.
And finally this week, penguins. Well, penguin parenting, actually. Researchers working for a citizen science project called Penguin Watch have discovered that the Antarctic birds have a unique way of feathering their nests.
They poop in them. Using time-lapse video, scientists observed that the Gentoo colony penguins aggregated in large groups, leaving behind massive piles of dung.
It appears the dark color of penguin poo absorbs heat faster than white snow around it, leaving a bare, rocky surface perfect for nesting.
And in other interesting adaptations, all penguins can desalinate their blood. They take in a lot of seawater as they eat other sea creatures.
The birds have a gland just above their eyes that filters salt from their bloodstream. The salt is then excreted through their bills or by sneezing.
Don't believe us? Google it. and you'll find more than 3,400 videos of sneezing penguins.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
Penguins are so sensitive. Penguins are so sensitive to my needs.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.